Welcome to the Greg Hughes Podcast. Today we're joined by Maeve and Ian Gallagher. In March 2023, their three-year-old son Dara passed away from bacterial sepsis following an invasive Group A strep infection. Dara's death occurred just 30 hours after he was seen by an out-of-hours medical service where a viral infection was diagnosed and he was sent home. In this episode, Maeve and Ian walk us through the timeline of Dara's illness, the symptoms they witnessed and the subsequent inquest that returned a narrative finding regarding his death. We also examine the broader context of the IGAS spike in Ireland that claimed the lives of 12 children during that period, the pressure placed on GPs and the coroner's specific recommendations regarding vaccinations and public health campaigns. Above all, Maeve and Ian speak about the daily reality of coping with such a profound loss and the strength it takes to keep going. I am with our guests today, Maeve and Ian Gallagher, parents of Dara. Both of you, thank you so much for calling in to see us.
Thanks, Greg.
I know when we were speaking little off air, there's a few things that you want to get across today, and one of those is awareness. That's really important, Maeve, to you and Ian.
Yeah.
Why so?
Well, we weren't aware of strep A, nor were we aware of how dangerous it was. And if it had been, if the symptoms had been sent to parents, as they were sent to doctors on the 1st of March 2023, showing that high temperature, localised pain, that these are signs of strep A, that when, because Dara had localised pain from that 9 o'clock in the morning, we would have questioned, and now doc, could it possibly be strep A?
Can you take us back, as much as both of you are comfortable in doing so, to March 17th of that year? March 18th, I beg your pardon.
Dara came in to us in the morning into the bedroom and got in beside us and was complaining about a pain high up, which was above, just around his chest, upper chest. We thought it might possibly be constipation or something like that there, so we got a suppository for him. This, he went to the toilet and the pain was still there. Throughout the day, he complained about sore head, sore neck, and still that pain in his chest. And he just wasn't, he wasn't eating or drinking. We eventually got some yogurt into him, but not very much. So then I rang NOWDOC.
And I mean, obviously, well, not say obviously, I presume, because that's what we do. You're Googling, right? Or maybe you're leaning on knowledge that you have or whatever it might be. What part of those symptoms was it that sort of made you think, right, we need to see a GP here, or was it the fact that the symptoms weren't improving?
They weren't improving, and Dara was one of these children that never complained about anything because he was afraid of missing out on something. So we knew he was just lying there beside me for the whole day, and then I just decided then,
need to get this looked at.
Need to get, and it was a bank holiday weekend, so I couldn't go to my own.
So that's when Doc came in?
That's when I rang NOWDOC.
Okay, and talk to us through that initial interaction.
So I rang, first, as you do, you have to ring and wait for them to ring back, and the triage nurse rang back. When I spoke with her, I explained what I've explained to you about Dara's symptoms, but she seemed to focus more on his lower tummy, thinking it, I don't know what she was thinking, but because she was not Irish, and there was a communication barrier, I don't think she understood.
Mm.
And then she, that was shortly after three, and she made an appointment for 7:15 that evening.
Okay, so that would have been a triage, I suppose, to some
triage,
extent. That's
yeah.
What it was supposed to be, right?
Supposed to be, but this email that would have been sent out, she should have read it as a triage nurse. It was supposedly made available, so NOWDOC should have made her aware.
And this is, and we'll come back to that, but I know this is a critical part of this part of the conversation. So there was a very specific email that was circulated from the HSC, which was offering very specific advice in relation to a strain that was going around at that time. So I know you showed me a copy of that email, which you have. As best as you can describe it, what was this directive coming from the HSE?
That to immediately send to refer the patient to the hospital if they show these symptoms. Now, because we were given Dara paracetamol, he wasn't showing a fever because the fever was masked, but he had the localized pain. He was lethargic. All that's written in that there email, which should have triggered it with the triage nurse.
If you'd have seen that email yourself, would it have been straight to the ED or?
It would have been, because you would have gone, all right, localized pain, it hasn't gone away at all. So that makes sense. But we never had that, and this wasn't. And you see, this is where it comes in when the pathologist was giving his results at the inquest, had said that a panel had been set up, and this panel was debating whether to make this knowledge, whether to let people know. They were afraid, would it scare people or would it not? But they were debating our child's life, really.
And there's we do see that in medicine a lot. The most recent conversation that was being had was about whether or not it should be an enhanced flu jab for the winter period. And there are people somewhere sitting down debating whether or not the cost would justify the anxiety versus how many people might actually die. You know, there is a, almost like an equation that, in other words, would do you ever imagine, were they thinking, if we put this out here, is the health system going to be overwhelmed just because it might die? Do you get? You know what I mean? That sounds cruel, and I'm not saying that's how they were thinking, but you can understand that, is that way you're thinking?
Well, yeah, you are, because in the UK, they had an outbreak of strep A, but the way they were treating it was if there was a case within the creche the children were at or the school, there was a blanket antibiotic given to every child that was in with that other child. So, you know, why was it not here? Like, you know, if I leave Letterkenny and go to Derry, does that there mean that, oh, we don't get such a, you know what
or
I mean?
Or are kids safer in a Derry school than a, or a creche than a Donegal one, for that matter?
No, just, Greg, the number was 12.
Mm.
12 children at that time.
Yeah, I was avoiding that because I didn't want to make it. I was reflecting a real conversation, but I do understand, Ian, exactly where you're coming from. And was there a child, Ian, in Dara's circle as well, also that was sick? Okay.
No, there was a child in the over Bridor area that this had happened.
I remember,
yeah. And we actually got a call on the 24th of April, which was actually Dara's, would have been Dara's fourth birthday, from the HSE, wondering, were the two children in the same vicinity?
Had they interacted?
Would they have been in the same playground? And I had to kind of say to him, well, do you know where Milford is?
Yeah.
And do you know, and he was to come back to me because they were going to gather information, but I've never heard back.
So you got to the appointment after the initial triage. Talk us through that experience.
When we were driving, coming to Old, Dara had gotten sick in the back of the car. Ian rang to get clothes off him, but we had to get in for an appointment, so I hadn't time to wait. So I stripped Dara down and I took him in to NIDOC, and then I had to take him back. I carried him in, then we got called shortly after 7. I carried Dara into the doctors and he sat up, put him up in the bed.
Okay, and what happened then from there when you went in for the appointment?
Well, I first said, oh, sorry, he's no clothes on because he's just after getting sick, coming over the bridge. And he kind of didn't acknowledge that, started looking at Dara, but he was directing all his questions rather than to me. And then he had said, he'd asked Dara where the pain was, and I can still remember to this day Dara staring directly at me. The doctor was a foreign doctor, so, and he was wearing a mask, so Dara couldn't understand.
And it was a,
it was different.
And a completely new experience as well for him.
Yeah. And he, I just wanted just to point to where the pain was. And it was high up. And I'd already told this doctor that it was high up. I asked then, would he, I explained to him that Dara was susceptible to throat infections in the past, and we would have gotten an antibiotic for him. And I said, could we get an antibiotic? No, he didn't think we needed an antibiotic. He would check him out. And then a wee while later, he was looking at his tummy. I says, it's a bit red, belly button. Is that anything to be concerned about? And he'd said no. And then he looked in his throat and he said he was red in his throat. And I again said, would that have been from him vomiting? And he dismissed that there. And then I asked, I said, does he need to, or no, he took him out. He walked out to weigh him to see what, how much medicine I should give him for the Panadol. And took him back in and I said to him, are you sure he doesn't need an antibiotic? And he says, no, he said, I could send you up to the hospital, but what's the point? You'd only be sitting up there for hours for them to take bloods and to send you home again.
Yeah, and he said in evidence he did not see the need to prescribe antibiotics to Dara as he suspected he had a mild viral infection. Mm-hmm. At that point, Dr. McCauley put it to Dr. Bazoukas that in her evidence, Mrs. Gallagher, which is you, said she had requested an antibiotic for your son.
Yeah.
So talk to us about that conversation.
Well, that was, so I'd asked him when I came in, and then when I said it the second time.
And he said?
He said, well, there was no point, or he didn't think there was any need for it. He could send me to the hospital, but we'd be sitting up there for hours to get bloods done to just be sent home again.
So was it reluctantly that you left at that point?
I didn't really have a choice. Yeah. I was told, come back in 48 hours if, go see your GP in 48 hours if he hasn't gotten any better.
And was there any, were you told, you know, if his condition deteriorates or if his fever worsens, straight to the hospital? You weren't?
No.
Okay. Because I've had that experience with similar, whereby that was the diktat, you know, if there's any worsening, straight to the ED. Mm. But you weren't, that advice wasn't given to you?
No.
Ian, were you there at this point? You were, of course.
I was at home, yeah, when Maeve went to the up to now doc, and I was at home when she came back home again. Like, and just, well, Maeve rung when she came out of now doc, and I thought, God, that didn't take very long. And it was, obviously Maeve said, everything she's just said to yourself there, Greg, and like, Dara, both had a restless night.
He had a restless night that night.
We kind of took turns sleeping, well, not sleeping with him, but lying beside him.
Mm.
And he got up on the Sunday morning and we couldn't say he was any worse, but he definitely was no better.
Yeah.
You know.
And did you take comfort from that, or did that make your concerns more so, Maeve?
I had decided at that stage that, you know, I'm going to take tomorrow, the next day off, and go straight to my own doctors, because my own doctors are brilliant, and in the past I've been... They knew about his throat infections, and they would have, I presume, have given me an antibiotic at that stage. Wouldn't have worked if we had got the antibiotic.
But what happened next then?
He, just the day was spent kind of paracetamol. He didn't eat very much. We had him drinking. And at 7:45 that evening, I decided to come on up to bed because I thought the two of us need to get to sleep.
Yeah.
And Ian came up
very
then.
Very restless to about 12 o'clock. And
Ian came up with the, he looked for juice.
Mm, and I took him up for juice at 12 o'clock, Greg. And that was an hour later, he was gone. So he was.
So. Quickly, really, in terms of,
he was still talking like he had given me his pillow, put it over me, and said, "Don't need that anymore, Mammy." And then a wee while later, I went to pull up his blanket, and I could feel his legs were cold, not realising then that there was it setting in. And then a wee while later then I just heard the rattle, and that's when I screamed for Ian. Ian was in my daughter's room that night.
It's very hard. How do you process that? I mean, even now, I mean, it's not, it's completely unnatural. It's horrendous.
Yeah.
It really is. At that point, did you, I mean, you're obviously taken up by this incredible loss. Was there a sense that something was missed here then, at that point? Immediately that this... Well, this loss that you have just...
The pathologist in Dublin rang on the...
Wednesday when we were...
Gara died in the very early hours of Monday morning. so, on the Wednesday morning, the pathologist rang and explained that what happened, what it was, and that Dara had strep A, pneumonia, and in the end, sepsis. And there was nothing could be done. And he really reiterated that at the inquest. So he did that the invasive part of the strep A that done all the damage is extremely hard to detect, extremely hard to treat, and a very, very short period of time until it's fatal is the best word I can use that I can use at the minute. So it is, and it is by all accounts a matter of hours. Now what we struggle to process is that less than 30 hours before that we had Dara at a doctor and none of this showed up.
Well, no, it wasn't checked. In my opinion, it wasn't checked.
There were layers of potentials signalers here that even a preventative course of antibiotics.
Yeah.
So in other words, yous would never have known the potential for what this could have become. We would never be sitting in this room. And in reality, that is probably the experience of a lot of families listening to us today. When they went, or at some point, there was a preventative course of antibiotics that were given. We understand doctors, GPs, they don't want to divvy them out left, right and centre.
They don't.
But there was a lot of what was strong indicators was in a circular issued by the HSE. So clearly there was trends here that were happening around the country.
Yeah. And like, we'll never know if Dara had got an antibiotic on Saturday evening, if it would have made a difference. We'll never know that now. We've been told it's likely that it wouldn't. But we'll never know.
What do you think, Maeve? Your mum, you know in yourself.
I think an antibiotic would have worked.
Yeah.
I genuinely do.
Yeah, and that the reason I asked you is because there can be a gut feeling, a sixth sense there that we could to and fro about medical opinion till the cows come home. Yeah. But sometimes, you know, and it sounds like through all of this, there was something niggling that we're missing something, or not we, but. You wanted a jury at the inquest. This was prior to you knowing what the outcome might be. Why was that important to you, either of you?
To have peers there that somebody that can see it kind of as a
that maybe can is it someone who maybe doesn't have. Someone that maybe is not from the medical profession. I know you're not. I know for a fact you're not suggesting there was any sort of lack of impartiality in the inquest. But in advance of the inquest, it was your feelings to ensure there could be no that there would be full impartiality. That's what you thought a jury would deliver.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly it, Greg. Yeah.
What is your experience of the inquest process? When you went in there, what were the unanswered questions, or did you have all of what you believe to be the information with the passage of time, and you just wanted to see if recorded would align with that? I mean, were there unanswered questions, Maeve, for you, for an example?
Yeah, we had requested somebody from NIDOC or Care Doc, whatever they're called now, to be there, and we were disappointed that the coroner didn't call somebody because we feel there was questions they needed to answer to.
And the feeling being that you couldn't get a complete story without questions being put to the now doc service as it was then.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I understand that. There was a lot then sort of mentioned at the inquest about, you know, there were people speaking about a spike in the eye gas. Is that what they pronounce it? Eye gas, is it? Cases during that period. I mean, you've answered this question already. Do you feel that, well, GPs were given enough warning by the health authorities at that time? The email would argue that they were.
The email was sent out, yeah.
Why then might that not be given to parents or schools? Do you ask that question?
That's what we did ask. We said why, or it should be sent out on the Aladdin app or sent home in the school bags. You know, why wasn't it on the news? You know, why weren't the symptoms headline news? And why aren't the symptoms headline news now with all these cases that are being reported? But all those cases were 2022, 2023, and now that it's going down, it's kind of, oh, well, forget about it. Mm-hmm. But what about if there's another spike? I don't know.
It's quite interesting because the HSC has spent a fortune in the last 6 months about sepsis. But sepsis in adults, or, you know, sepsis, you know, it's not focused specific on a particular group like children, and you'd wonder why that's the case.
Probably the only thing, sepsis has been pushed an awful lot since.
Yeah, but that was December 2023.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They would say the spike in it back then would be related to COVID because of children not interacting with each other around that time, and I suppose maybe the word in that their immune system was slightly lower at the time.
I'm not sure that's medically proven, though. I think that's an opinion.
That's an opinion.
Of course, that's both the pathologist and the coroner would have voiced that opinion to us. Like.
But there obviously was enough concern about it spreading and how it was spreading for the HSE to send this email out to medical professionals. Yeah. So we can't say this came out of the blue either.
No.
That there potentially was...
And we don't know what emails they've got since. Mm-hmm. Either in relation to that, we don't.
But we just know that
it was out.
It was out the 1st of March.
So this narrative finding, where the coroner talked of what actually happened, that Dara died as a result of bacterial sepsis as a result of invasive group A strep infection. Effectively, he uses the full medical term, and then goes on to sort of outlined that the infection that possibly started 8 hours before Dara died, and it was probably preceded by a viral infection. That's stating the facts as he found them. The coroner issued two recommendations considering invasive group A strep is such a rapidly developing illness with extremely sudden onset, resulting in severe injury and death, especially in children under 1 year of age, and for which there is no specific test to help in its early diagnoses. Because this life-changing and potentially fatal infection are normally preceded by a simple viral infection, the most effective action that parents can undertake is to minimize the immediate and long-lasting devastation that IGAS, eye gas, can have on their community to ensure that their children are fully vaccinated against the common childhood illnesses, particularly seasonal influenza and chickenpox. Encouraging the continuance of public health campaigns in relation to the recognition of the early forms of childhood sepsis in such a way that it does not cause excessive alarm but informs the public. And really, maybe that talks to why the information wasn't delivered publicly after it had been received by GPs, because obviously in the medical profession, and I can understand it, they don't want to cause excessive alarm. But we spoke about sepsis very soon after, very soon after Dara's passing. And like, I thought we were serving a public service, and that, you know, you can leave it up to the public to decide what's alarming or what's not alarming. We don't all have to be scared, but it's good to have the knowledge.
Yeah, to have the information. You know, when you've chicken, the likes of chicken pox, you know what to look out for. You know, it's knowledge that's given to you, but there's no knowledge given to anybody about strep A.
No, and I think just the jump from, you know, one condition to another, we're not really equipped. We need to have that information. We need to walk out of a GP's with it that if the temperature hits this, do that. Mm-hmm. If this doesn't improve in that amount of time, do the other.
Yeah.
Well, Craig's, for years world, information is key. You know, if we're to look out for these things, we can maybe spot something that might have helped us along the way. And, you know, we can't understand why it wasn't put into the public. Like, you know, going back to the COVID thing, after a couple of cases, they shut the country down.
Mm.
So they did.
You see, I think that what probably makes it even more difficult for you guys is there are obvious contradictions to that policy of how you get information out and when you get information out. Mm-hmm. Because we do know during the COVID that it was a strategy, if not in this country, certainly it was admitted in other countries, to scare the public into compliance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously that can be an arm of the messaging when it needs to be.
All we can hope for here, Greg, is that obviously nothing's going to change our situation. But if this interview rings bells with one family that might save one person, child, whatever it may be, that's all we're trying to do here. Like, it's not, the last thing we need is more sympathy. We've got no end of that from friends, family, friendly strangers per se. And all we're trying to do now is raise awareness.
What message then, as we sort of go to wrap up, in both of your own words, what is the message about awareness that you want to get out there?
I want to make people aware of the symptoms. I want the HSE, the Minister for Health, whoever out there, to do something. If they had done something in 2022 when they had this first case, then we mightn't be sitting here. We might be sitting at home with our boy. But we're not. And in my eyes and in my opinion, we've been let down by NIDOC, the doctor, the HSE and the Minister for Health. Because what's the point in a Minister for Health if they can't do something about health?
Yeah, and of course you expressed the inquest and a firm defence of that was put up, and that's a matter for public record. So when you talk about what the HSE could do or the Minister of Health, is it an annual awareness campaign? Is it having a system in place whereby if there is one case, then they can presume there's going to be multiple cases in the year Dara passed away, 12 families went through what you're going through, right? So, or do you want to park it with them and saying, look, you're the experts, but you need to do something more than you're doing now?
It's not what they do need to be. They need to look at the UK, Northern Ireland's part of our island, although it's part of the UK. We should all be treated the same health-wise. They were all given blanket antibiotics. It saved numerous children. But they couldn't do it down here.
Mm.
And why couldn't they do it down here? Why couldn't they go on RT News or Highland Radio, all those, and say to people, watch out for these symptoms? Because even now, with the inquest, yes, it was sepsis, but sepsis happened because Dara had strep A.
Hmm.
You know, so
There is precedent again very recently there. We had a very big campaign advising people, if they have any chest pains at all, to immediately call the emergency services and to not put it down to something else. It was in relation to heart attacks in adults. So these information campaigns are there and they're cycled out as the HSC sees fit. How are you coping now? It's not like it's in the past. This is right now, you know, what you're going through. It's not whatever particular year, I presume. I think you're good supports for each other.
We are, we keep going for our two kids. We have to. But every time you go upstairs, close your eyes, open your eyes, it doesn't go away. The pain doesn't. And you know, after a year, it doesn't. You just, you don't move on. You just, you go.
You
through.
Learn to live with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, something we do every day, going to bed, is probably a, almost like a trigger for you, Maeve.
Yeah, you're going up and you're going through your routine. And then you're waking in again, I tell you. I'll be up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, just because it's not so much going to sleep, it's waking up and realising that this is still...
Yeah, it's a reality.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of this conversation has been to hopefully prevent any other family, any other parent going through what you're going through, because it's really quite clear that you wouldn't wish this on your very, very worst enemy.
Not at all, Greg. You would not. God save us, you wouldn't. Like, as I said previously there, that it's just raise a wee bit of awareness, people. Keep an eye out, maybe a more closer eye on certain things when people's unwell, children's unwell, you know. Definitely wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy. Not. No, you couldn't.
When they say on this email that it was received from... the doctors all received, it said immediately refer to hospital if the below symptoms. So it's high, it's just to make people aware.
Mm-hmm.
High fever, chills, rigors, sweats, myalgia, and localized pain.
And this is the localized pain seems to be the standout one.
Yeah. But Dara's was high up, so it was never low down. It was never going to be appendicitis or anything like that.
Okay.
It was high up, and that should have been a trigger.
Yeah. And that's for people listening as well too. And that advice was sent prior to Dara's passing, and that was sent to GP services, etc., because presumably there had been other cases and they'd known what was seen there and they were getting that out there, but we never really got it. Mm. And it feels to you that this advice didn't form part of the treatment of your child in the first instance.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, in all of this, there are also people, people who were very and remain very important to you through this experience.
Hi, Greg. I just... would like to thank the ambulance service. Like we've said it before, there was 3 ambulances in our street in a very, very short space of time that night, and that done the utmost to save Dara. Now, obviously, we didn't know at the time, but there was nothing to be done. But them men, and I'm saying men because it was all men that night. But them people in the ambulance service, the work they do is incredible.
Why is that so important? Do you mind me asking? Is it because they got it or because they wouldn't give up on Dara like yous wouldn't give up? I'm not trying to pull at the heartstrings, but why is that so important to you?
It's just, I suppose, maybe my own opinion is they maybe don't get enough recognition for what they do. The first ambulance that landed our street had a patient on board, and they were halfway between Milford and Kilmacrenan, and turned and came back. I think we were on the phone to 999 for 4.5 minutes when they pulled up on the street.
Wow.
Which is an incredible time frame. Like Letterkenny's at a push 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
That time of the night and morning, a bit quicker. Ambulances obviously a little bit quicker. But them 2 men that came in first, when they looked up at us and it was decided they couldn't do any more, their hearts were breaking.
Yeah.
So they were.
Yeah, there's something formed there that'll never be broken, and obviously then you have to deal with Gardaí, you have to deal with
the guards as well,
the clergy, and
Father Martin Collum came from Rathmullen at a seemed like a very fast rate that night as well, you know, and the guards were there, and the guards have been very, very good to us since, you know, they were always checking on and when they had to come out to get a statement, they were very, I suppose, compassionate is the right word maybe to use.
Yeah.
And you know, even at the inquest, spoke very well and were very kind towards us as well. Like, so, okay. Yeah.
And two of the ambulance men, when Dara was taken away that night, he was taken with his blanket, and they promised me that they would take it back. And the two men came down to the house the next day, and they wouldn't let anybody take it off. They said they promised to give it to me, and they came up the stairs and handed it to me.
Wow.
You know, out of their own time. So they are, the guards and the ambulance, they don't get enough recognition. But for us, they were extremely kind.
Well, I want to thank both of you very, very much for calling up to see us and being part of this, Maeve and Ian Gallagher. And we wish, whatever is required going forward, you know, whatever that is, I don't know, is it strength? Is it faith? Is it, I don't know, but whatever it takes to but you have each other, and I think that's a good head start.
Yeah.
And our sincere thanks once again to Maeve and Ian Gallagher for their bravery in sharing their story. Don't forget, we have new episodes of the Greg Hughes podcast available for you every Friday morning from 11 a.m. to listen at your leisure. It's available for you on the Highland Radio website. You can also find us on Spotify and iTunes. Just search Greg Hughes podcast, Highland Radio. We value your feedback on this podcast. If you have any thoughts or comments, please reach out to the researcher and producer, Caroline Orr, at carolineorr@highlandradio.com. Thanks for listening. Until we speak again.